This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come.
Is the Coalition's plan to get out of the net zero ambition common sense or stupidity? It depends who you ask. But the opposition leader is out there pushing this new policy. Could it end up costing her the top job? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, Susan Lee.
And it's actually not about votes or the next election. It's about the right thing to do for the next generation for me.
Yeah, the opposition leader is my guest very soon. Also ahead, the Epstein files. Donald Trump is now saying they should be released. After a few days of bombshells, we're going to get into that. First, though, Hack.
The Coalition's popularity has now hit its lowest point since Australia's federation.
Triple J.
They've agreed, and now they're selling it to the country. The Coalition's new energy strategy. No more net zero goals. The focus on bringing down power prices. But will it work? And what about climate change goals? What's happening there? Well, in a second, opposition leader Susan Lee will join me in studio to answer some of your questions. But first, Hack political reporter Shalila Medora.
Susan Lee has been on a content blitz today, talking to TV shows, podcasts, talkback radio, and in a sec, Hack. One of the stops was a manufacturing company in Western Sydney.
I think it's a fun place to work, Gareth. I'm getting that impression from
what she's selling is her party's new energy and climate policy.
Australians deserve affordable energy and responsible emissions reduction. And the Coalition knows that you can have both.
So yesterday, the Liberals and Nationals confirmed their climate policy after dumping the net zero emissions target by 2050. But will both still try to reduce emissions year on year? Leader of the Nationals, David Littleproud, says that means Australia sticks with the global Paris climate change agreement.
We'll live up to our international commitments. We're saying that we're going to continue to reduce our emissions in line with the OECD. We're not going to streak ahead.
The Coalition's policy would force the energy regulator to prioritise cheap energy over emissions reduction.
And make sure that the approach is technology neutral, one that's not delivered by ideology.
It would see taxpayer money go into supporting gas projects and even propping up coal-fired power stations, according to Shadow Energy Minister Dan Tehan. But head of the Australian Energy Council, Lisa Kinnear, says keeping old coal and gas plants open longer than needed won't bring down power prices.
You look at the ageing assets that are there, the cost to operate and maintain them beyond their technical life is actually very significant. We're already seeing some state governments supporting those existing coal-fired power stations to stay open longer for reliability reasons, and that does add cost to the system.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has called the Coalition's policy nonsensical and says it's designed solely to keep Susan Lee from losing the top job.
Australians know the cheapest form of new energy is renewables. That's why the Liberals' coalition policy is friendless. There isn't an energy expert in Australia coming out and saying this, whatever it is, will work.
Business groups aren't so keen on the Coalition's climate policy either, saying it leads to investor uncertainty. Here's CEO of the Australian Industry Group, Innes Willicks.
When you start taking away some of the core principles here or playing with them, that makes business pause to think around, well, what comes next? Will there be further upheaval in the years ahead that will impact the investments that I'm looking to make now?
Hack on Triple J.
Shalila Medora reporting there and hearing from you on Hack's Instagram. Someone says, is it possible to have an objective discussion about this issue? Australia produces 1% of emissions. But then another person says, if you can't win, don't try style of leadership here. It is a bold approach, that person says. Well, look, let's learn a little more about this plan. And joining me in the Hack studio is the opposition leader, Susan Lee. Welcome back to Hack.
Great to be here, Dave.
If the Coalition does want to be re-elected, you're going to have to win over Gen Z and millennial voters. Like, that's the biggest voting bloc in the country. I guess my question to you is, have you blown up that opportunity with this
decision to abandon the idea of striving for net zero by 2050?
Dave, I said when I became leader that I'd show up on your show, and I am, and I'd also listen to young people, and in fact all Australians, meet them where they are, and I've been doing that for the last 6 months. I strenuously disagree with the suggestion that this is going to, as you say, blow up chances with Gen Z and millennial. And it's actually not about votes or the next election. It's about the right thing to do for the next generation for me, because I feel that Gen Zs and millennials are a disenfranchised generation. And I know that they do care, in fact, not just them, all Australians, for their country, their environment. And emissions reduction matters a great deal, and it matters to me.
I do want to ask about what young people want, because we have the research in front of us. The Australian election study shows that climate is still a top issue. You're right that cost of living is the top, that is what most young people are thinking about front of mind all the time. But according to Hilmer's Network Research, which is, you know, a group that represents liberal women, 65% of women aged 18 to 54 want Australia to remain committed to net zero, regardless of whether we're on track to reach that goal. So they're the people you desperately need to win over. Aren't you worried about abandoning those people that the Liberal Party really, really needs right now?
Dave, we're not on track to meet net zero under this government's policies. It's cost us $75 billion already. It's another $530 billion to get to Labor's longer-term target. Meanwhile, they can't explain the cost. Their energy policy is actually crashing the cost of living. So I'm not going to look Australians in the eye and pretend for 1 second that there's something in Labor's policy that will actually reach this long-term target. Our emissions reduction plan is all about reducing emissions year on year in line with comparable countries and as fast and as far as technology will allow.
I want to get to the Paris Agreement in a minute, but do you acknowledge that eventually we will need to get to net zero, because that's what we're hearing from all the experts around the world. The world will eventually need to get to net zero, and obviously Australia is part of that. When do you see Australia reaching net zero?
Reaching net zero would be welcome if we can get there with technology, voluntary markets.
So you're saying we may not get there?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's a welcome target. But my point is not delineating a target at a certain date, but looking at what's happening now, because what's happening now determines not just people's standard of living and our management of our economy and our environment, but what we even do in the year that leads, the years that lead up to 2050 and beyond.
But surely you've also got to look ahead. At this point, there are young people who are listening to this conversation now and they're thinking, yes, there are real struggles in front of us. Cost of living pressures are extreme. But we need to be looking forward, and we need to know that the government and potential governments have our best interests at heart.
And that's why our affordable energy plan talks in detail about reducing emissions. Australia is 1.1% of global emissions. We can't change the temperature or the climate from the whole world from Australia, but we do need to play our part, and that's why the measures that we've put forward are sensible and responsible.
But do you understand why some young Australians, and not all, there are some who would support your move to scrap the ambition for net zero by 2050, but a lot are getting in touch with us now. We're hearing from them on our text line, and they're saying it sounds like the coalition is just throwing in the towel, that they're saying, okay, perhaps we'll get to net zero, but we don't want it to be too hard or too expensive.
We're definitely not throwing in the towel. We're here for the next generation and for their standard of living. And we're also here to take the action that we responsibly should in this country with respect to climate and emissions. And I think it's important that, and I know young people will be, and I'm glad, by the way, that the conversation is happening, because people will look at Labor's policy and they will conclude that there's been a lot of promises that your energy bills would go down. They've gone up 40%.
All right, this is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with opposition leader Susan Lee about her new climate policy that the coalition has announced, abandoning net zero aspirations but promising to bring down power prices. Hearing from you on the text line, Sean says, no, net zero, more like net zero seats for the Libs. This will backfire immediately. Another person says, pushing back the inevitable by 10 years and wasting billions along the way. And someone else says, why should we continue to support renewables when we haven't seen any respite in electricity bills? I think we all want to reduce emissions, but not at the cost of lives and livelihoods. That is an interesting point, Susan Lee. I'm keen to hear what your thoughts are on the Australian Energy Council, so the peak body for energy, warning today that delaying a renewable energy transition will cause power prices to keep rising.
Are these the same experts that told us that renewable energy would make your power bills cheaper? Because I suspect that all of these experts were the same ones who said, don't worry, renewable energy will make your power cheaper.
Well, can we get
but
on to
the government
power prices?
Said that.
Well,
the government said your power bills will come down.
Because it's an important point and it's one that you're pushing as you really lead this argument that abandoning net zero by 2050 is the right thing to do. Is it unfair to be linking the net zero commitment with rising power prices?
Well, the government is linking its own flawed net zero commitment with the cost of electricity today.
But is it fair? Is it giving...
I'm telling you that what we're facing now, Dave, is what the government is doing. They have set this target, this long-term target, and in working back from that, they are driving the amount of renewables into the grid to a level where costs are going through the roof.
But let's listen to some of the experts. And we've got Tony Wood, who's one of the country's most respected energy analysts, a former Origin Energy executive himself, saying this price increase that we've seen with power bills has almost nothing to do with renewable energy. That's his words. He says it's time for politicians to stop making promises to reduce power prices when they can't control physical infrastructure or the weather. Mm. What do you say to that?
The physical infrastructure that's building the renewable energy grid is incredibly expensive, incredibly delayed, and driving up the cost of the grid.
And what about the cost of aging coal-fired power plants?
It is true that coal is providing the majority of the energy grid because no matter how hard this government pushes renewables, they're not quite ready to do all of the heavy lifting yet. Now, I just want to make one thing clear. Mm. I'm pro-renewables in the right place. So they've got to be social license to make sure that we're not putting them where people and communities really don't want them. But renewables can't do the job on their own because they can't provide baseload and dispatchable power. So you need both, and that balancing is not being done by the government's energy policy.
I do want to bring you back to this point, though, because it does sound like you are blaming the higher prices on renewable energy and specifically the net zero goal. When we are hearing from so many experts, it's not just Tony Wood, it's Dylan McConnell, who's an energy researcher, it's Alison Reeve, and they're saying that aging and increasingly unreliable coal-fired power plants, really bad weather, and high coal and gas prices, partly driven by the war in Ukraine, that's the real reason we're seeing people's power prices going up. It's not the investment in renewable energy. In fact, there was some research from Griffith University that found power prices would have been 50% higher had renewables not been part of the mix over the past few years.
Mm. Well, I definitely would question that. I'm glad they mentioned reliability of energy supply because that, of course, cannot be provided for by the renewable grid at this point in time. The war in Ukraine, which is often pointed to, I know you don't want me to mention the government, but often pointed to by the government for the source of all ills, is not the problem here. The problem here
but
is that
it has
that
been
if
a
you,
big part of it.
Well, the problem here is that in building the renewable energy grid, so the Labor Party is saying they want you to have renewable energy and they're pushing quite large volumes of renewable energy into the national grid. So that is without question. You can't argue with that part. The next question is, how much is it costing to do that? And it's costing a lot more than they ever thought. That's sure, that's absolutely the case because the ingredients of that grid are all part of an overseas supply chain.
But does that mean we should be boosting investment into the renewable sector?
Our approach is we're technology neutral. We're not saying it should be this or it should be that, but we have to provide affordable power. So let's come back to that. That's at the centre of our plan. We're not saying like the government is, it must be all renewable. We're saying it has to start by being affordable. We know that gas is an important transition fuel before we get to the new technologies that our plan does in fact fund, but we have to start with affordability.
This is Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm joined by Opposition Leader Susan Lee. We're talking about the Coalition's new climate policy and hearing so much from you on the text line. Dan from Warrnambool says, I'm a Gen Z voter with a Liberal member representing me. Dumping the climate target is a big turnoff. Climate change and the cost of living are both equally important to me. I'll not be voting Liberal, Susan Lee. You've lost a voter here, is Dan's message. Another person says, looks like more independence in the federal parliament next election. Someone else, though, says, what is the point of getting to net zero if we can't afford to live in this country? Is that person's opinion? And someone else says, net zero emissions is impossible, in my view. Look, Susan Lee, on the Paris Agreement, you've mentioned that and you're saying the Coalition is committed to that agreement. But by scrapping the net zero commitment, Australia would be effectively reneging on Paris, right?
We're playing our part. Paris is not about locking in your nationally determined contribution.
But it says no backsliding and it says it needs to reflect the highest possible ambition. And that's not really what we're doing. We're backsliding. We're saying we had a commitment and now we're scrapping that.
The first thing is the government is nowhere near the 43% that they legislated in the last term of government. There's no hope in the world they're going to meet the 62 to 70% that they've sent to Paris for the next time.
So should we give up?
So let's, no, we should never give up. But I just want to make that point. What we would do is say, if we were fortunate enough to be elected, we would update our commitment and we would explain why it was where it was. But I don't think any Australians would expect us to devastate our local economy because of some international agreement, and other countries are watering down their agreements all the time. There's a lot of tricky language going on.
There are a lot of countries that are still committed to net zero. People talk of China, the world's largest emitter there. We know that in the first 6 months of this year, it's installed twice as much solar capacity as the rest of the world combined.
Do you know how much coal capacity it's installed? I don't have the figure to hand, but it's incredibly large,
okay,
I tell you, because its emissions are actually starting, its emissions are going up,
well,
not down.
They've been flat or falling over the past 18 months. So there is a lot of work happening and there are comparable countries to us.
Dave, China is one of the world's biggest emitters, and to suggest that they've got it right and we've got it wrong is, if I may say so, inappropriate, because our emissions under us when we were in government were coming down, under Labor they're flatlining, and under our plan we are saying that they will come down year on year on average and as fast and as far as technology will allow.
I guess what you've got to take into consideration though, Susan Lee, is the circumstances around emissions going up and emissions going down. Emissions going down under previous coalition governments, there were other factors at play there. One of them was COVID, and surely you're not taking responsibility for that.
Well, I know what we're looking at now, and COVID is in the past,
I know,
and the government still hasn't got it
but
right.
But if we're talking about previous coalition governments bringing down emissions, we have to provide the context.
I'm going back well before COVID. It isn't just COVID.
It's now, also investing in the renewable sector, which previous coalition governments did.
And I believe that renewables have an incredibly important role to play. So it's a mistake to suggest that anything in our plan is anti-renewable. It certainly isn't. Renewables do have their place. But in Spain and Portugal, not that long ago, the lights went completely out. There was a cascading series of failures in the generation capacity of a renewables grid. That was an experiment that failed. We can't afford to have those sorts of failures here.
What about the failure to address this climate crisis? Because we've had recently the head of the United Nations saying the world is facing a moral failure and deadly negligence if governments fail to limit global heating. Mm.
And governments should all play their part. Now, Australia is 1.1% of all of the global emissions, and we are playing our part.
There is talk that your leadership is under threat at the moment, that people might be switching their allegiances to Andrew Hastie. Could this decision on net zero have cost you your leadership?
Dave, I know there's commentary and there's even commentary on commentary. I don't step away from my task for a single moment, nor do I lose focus. What I'm doing is talking about our plan for affordable energy, responsible emissions reduction.
Do you think Andrew Hastie would make a good leader?
Well, I'm not going to answer those questions with respect, because I value everyone in my party room for the contribution they've made to the plan and the fact that they care, like I do, about the future of this country.
Just finally, Susan Lee, in 2050, both you and Anthony Albanese, you're going to be approaching 90 years old and probably not going to be in Parliament anymore. But a lot of the people who are listening now are going to be working, maybe providing for a family. They're going to be facing whatever challenges the world is throwing at them at that time. Can you assure those Australians now that they're not going to be left to pick up the pieces from your generation's policy and action?
We're fighting for a policy that has those young Australians front and centre. I can't say that too many times, Dave, because if we allow our economy to go backwards and young people to not be able to afford to buy a home, to raise a family, to live in a safe, secure country, does manufacturing that leans into the new industries of AI and data capture, that finds its place in the world in a secure and confident manner, then we will have let that generation down.
All right. Opposition Leader Susan Lee, appreciate you fronting up as always. Thank you for joining us on Hack today.
Thank you very much.
And we've got so many messages coming through. Someone says, why are we spending so much money to make a minuscule change to the climate when other more bigger polluters are not doing that? Someone else says, if coal and gas are aging, we need nuclear for baseload power. Stop talking about it and get on with it. And then someone else says, I do feel for Susan Lee. This is Nationals policy through and through. Totally out of touch.
This is Hack.
The pressure is mounting on President Trump and the Justice Department to release all of the files related to the Jeffrey Epstein investigation.
On Triple J.
Yeah, the Epstein files could be released this week in full. After years of speculation, a lot of political controversy, US President Donald Trump has today said he wants them made public. Donald Trump says he's got nothing to hide after he was mentioned in some emails last week. So what more could be in there? Well, in a bit, we're going to ask an expert, but Jackson Worthington's been looking into it.
Don't you people know anything about a cover-up? This is like trying to hide pissing yourself by shitting yourself.
Late-night TV hosts in the US are having a field day right now after Republican politicians in the House of Representatives released more than 20,000 of Jeffrey Epstein's emails.
Trump's people spent a year saying there are no Epstein files. Now there's 20,000 pages and those still aren't the files. What happened?
And these emails are the tip of the iceberg. On Wednesday, our time, America's Congress will vote on a bill to release the whole lot. And it's not just Democrats. There are politicians who back Donald Trump behind it too, like Republican Thomas Massie.
You know, the president's been saying this is a hoax. He's been saying that for months. Well, he's just now decided to investigate a hoax, if it's a hoax. And I have another concern about these investigations that he's announced. If they have ongoing investigations in certain areas, those documents can't be released. So this might be a big smokescreen.
Donald Trump has been defying calls for the files for months.
It's all been a big hoax. It's perpetrated by the Democrats. And some stupid Republicans and foolish Republicans fall into the net.
But at lunchtime today, he did a big backflip. In a post on Truth Social, he wrote that House Republicans should vote to release the files. A quick step back here. So in July 2019, Jeffrey Epstein was arrested and charged with sex trafficking minors. But a month later, he died by suicide in his prison cell. The New York financier had links to some of the most powerful people in the world, including Donald Trump, former President Bill Clinton, and King Charles's brother Andrew. Epstein was convicted of crimes linked to trafficking women and girls for sex. When he died, there were a lot of conspiracies. Before the US election last year, Trump said he would get to the bottom of it by releasing Epstein's client list if he won.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to do the Epstein. I'd have no problem with it.
Last week, there was another twist when a Democratic committee investigating Epstein released three emails mentioning Donald Trump. In one, Epstein described Trump as the dog that hasn't barked. So what are Donald Trump supporters making of it? Well, they're split, and the president seems worried. On the weekend, he said Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene was a traitor. She hit back, questioning Donald Trump's motivation.
I stand with these women, and I will not apologize for that. I believe the country deserves transparency in these files, and I don't believe that rich, powerful people should be protected. I have no idea what's in the files. I can't even guess, but that is the questions everyone is asking, is why fight this so hard?
Meanwhile, Epstein survivor Annie Farmer says it's sad people like her have got swept up in a political fight.
This case has been politicized, but it is not political. This is not a partisan issue. The sexual abuse of children and young women is in no way partisan.
But with the vote on the files happening in the next 48 hours, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson saying the politics is only going to get more intense.
He's not worried about it. I talk to him all the time. He has nothing to do with this. He's frustrated that they're turning it into a political issue. Epstein is their entire game plan. So we're going to take that weapon out of their hand.
Hack on Triple J.
Jackson Worthington reporting there, and I do want to hear from you. If you are really captivated by this story, you found yourself over the weekend hanging on every update, looking at all the new drops that are coming out, wondering what might come out next, get in touch, 0439 757 555. I want to have a bit more of a chat now with Dr. Emma Shortis, who's a US politics expert and director of the Australia Institute's International and Security Affairs Program. Emma, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Dave, thanks for having me.
Were you expecting Donald Trump to come out and call for these files to be released?
Well, I mean, he has kind of flipped and flopped a bit on the Epstein files before, Dave. You know, he's promised to release everything before in his election campaign and then walked that back. So I think he was reading the room when it came to Congress, and it's looking like Republicans would defy him. So I think what he was doing with this particular flip-flop is trying to get ahead of that.
It does seem like he obviously knows what's in the files. We don't know what else is in there. Do you think Donald Trump is confident that he can deal with the public's reaction to whatever could be included in those files?
Well, I mean, history suggests that he can be confident, doesn't it? You know, he's managed to, I think, set the narrative with a lot of this, not just Epstein, but with almost all controversies that he has faced. So I think he can be confident in his ability to do that. And I think he's also perhaps confident because while this legislation might pass the House of Representatives, it also has to get to the Senate. And I think he may suspect that he can rely on his Republican allies there in the Senate to either slow walk this or, you know, do a partial release or handle it in a way that works for Donald Trump.
Okay, so there's still a chance here that it may not be as easy as the files are released in a couple of days.
Look, I suspect so. You know, I don't think it's going to be that simple. I think it's entirely possible it will pass the House and there'll be some files released, but there's still, I think, a long way to go with this. And we've got to remember that, you know, it's not just Trump who is named in the documents that have already been released. It's a lot of very powerful people who have interests in this not being made public, and that's not going to change overnight.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Dr. Emma Shortis, who is a US politics expert from the Australia Institute. We're chatting about the Epstein files. There's a lot of interest in this at the moment. Mm. Emma, how much has this issue fractured Republicans? Like, what kind of impact has it had on that party?
Look, Dave, there's always been kind of infighting, I guess, in the MAGA coalition because Trump managed to unify Christian evangelicals and libertarians, and they don't, you know, necessarily share ideologies. But Epstein is one, I think, that is really rattling at least part of his base because he did promise transparency. You know, he promised transparency on Epstein. He promised to dismantle the deep state. He promised to end all wars, and he hasn't done that. And I think part of the base, kind of represented, I guess, by Marjorie Taylor Greene, feels that betrayal and is getting increasingly frustrated with him. So I think that infighting will continue. But, you know, again, Donald Trump's been very good at managing that and using it to his advantage. So we shouldn't underestimate his ability to keep doing that.
We've got so many messages coming through. Liam says, good to see this. It was part of his election promise anyway. Another person says he's the president of the United States. Surely he can just release the files. Doesn't need to be voted on. Another person says, I'm confused. I thought they said they didn't exist in the first place. There's a lot of comments coming through on this one and so much interest. Yeah, Emma, do we know how Americans feel about this generally? Like, has there been much polling on their thoughts on these files and their belief in the government and what they're saying?
Look, I think, Dave, that part of the reason there's so much interest in this, you know, as far away as Australia, is because it has this sense of truth to it. You know, especially in American politics, there's always this sense of a conspiracy by the elite to control power. And the Epstein files, you know, I think put some truth to that. And so Americans, I think, are very cynical about this. They're very cynical about Trump and his willingness to release those files. And I think what it's doing is increasing a kind of disengagement from politics, which can actually advantage Donald Trump. So I think it sort of feeds into that apathy and cynicism about politics being controlled by elite Americans who have no interest in the general well-being of the rest of Americans. And that's why Marjorie Taylor Greene has got such cut through, because that's what she's saying.
Yeah, well, we may know a lot more very soon, but we thank you so much for your take, Dr. Emma Shortis. Appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on Hack.
Pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
And we've got more messages coming through on Hack's Instagram. Someone says, I worry about what they may have redacted from these files. Someone else says, Trump's doing this now because he wants to look like a hero. Also got a lot of messages coming through on our interview with opposition leader Susan Lee. Someone says, Susan Lee, thank you for listening to Regional Australia. All options need to be on the table so Regional Australia isn't turned into an industrial dumping ground. Someone else says, Susan is the only one trying to be real about net zero. She wants our country's people to be able to afford life now. But then there are other people who are saying, no, I feel really upset listening to this. I just don't understand why we can't stick with the net zero commitment. Another person says we're one of the biggest coal exporters. So it's worth remembering as well. That is all we've got time for on Hack for now.